This episode of Dreaming in a Nightmare with Jeremiah Emmanuel was recorded in front of a live audience at the Snap Forward Summit, hosted by our friends at Snapchat.
It's not illegal to dream. It's not silly. I mean, I had small dreams about being like a chef when I was like really, really young, dreams of acting or being an actual fine artist, but that seemed like a silly, really silly thought. Like a thought in passing. Yeah. But it wasn't after everything that happened that I realised that it's a good thing to dream. It's a really good thing.
Bukki Bakre is a BAFTA award-winning actress, writer and director. At just 15, she was discovered at school by director Sarah Gavron and given the lead role in coming-of-age drama Rocks. The experience of learning about the character she played helped Bukki to express herself in new ways.
Because that's what acting is, it's vulnerability, and like we were learning to be open and vulnerable. It didn't feel intimidating at all.
Since Rocks, for which she became the youngest ever recipient of the BAFTA Best Newcomer Award, she's appeared in the 2021 Forbes 30 Under 30 list and has upcoming roles in the film Self Charm, the BBC One series You Don't Know Me, and the Apple TV series Liaison. Most recently, she wrote and directed her first short film, a collaboration with Gucci called Born Fruit. In this conversation with Jeremiah, you'll hear how art, music, and acting has shaped Bukki's view of the world, her determination to change the film industry from within, and the lessons she's learned about gratitude, love, and friendship. But first, here's a reminder of the film that brought Bukki to our attention in the first place.
I think you should tell someone about your mum.
It's just you and Emmanuel.
You all don't understand.
What's the problem? Talk to me. I
don't
get it.
I need you to worry for me. You're nothing such a
beautiful world. You have to leave now.
Get out. Get out. Because nothing can be loved into
something. There's got to be a way to solve all this. You just can't keep going on by yourself. Now we move forward.
I've got 5 pounds.
I have 20.
Yeah, I see the queen. The queen's shining. Hey,
Ross, man.
What a work day.
Welcome to the future.
Oi, where's your ticket?
Close your eyes. Think of everything that is happy. And stop thinking about all your worries.
We're coming with you.
Every time I look at that trailer, I get a bit emotional.
Yeah, Rocks is a film about like love, friendship, girlhood, just young people, young entrepreneurship. And this one girl in particular goes through something, trying to look after her younger brother. And she tries to manage her friendships and the world around her that she's created for herself. And she gets all these like milestones like thrown at her, and we just see how she deals with it and how in the end it's friendship that gets her to the place that she never knew that she wanted to be, but the place that she needed to be.
This was filmed back in 2018. So yeah, incredible. Bukki, welcome to Dreaming in a Nightmare. We always ask our guests this as a first sort of like conversation starter. But what did you dream of becoming when you were older? So if you think back to your earlier years, what was that dream of the future and where would you be?
I don't think I was a big dreamer. My older brothers were really good at art and I envied that in my brothers. So my brother used to do an art club where we would draw portraits of musicians that we liked for like 30 seconds and we would keep doing it for 30 seconds until I got better and I ended up studying art and everything. And I wasn't a big reader when I was in school. I found books later on in my life, but I still managed to have a really good, like I was really good at academia. I was in top set. I managed to do well in like the subjects that everyone did.
Yeah.
But I didn't love it. It was always much harder than it was for the people around me. So I knew I was good at art. And what me and my friends used to do is we used to go on Indeed and type in art and see what the highest paying job was for art. And I saw about, like, I think about 80 grand per annum. And I saw the qualification, and I was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So that's what the plan was until Rocks, like, the whole process came along, and it showed me that it's not illegal to dream. It's not silly to dream. It's not... I mean, I had small dreams about being, like, a chef when I was, like, really, really young. Dreams of acting or being an actual fine artist. But that seemed like a silly, really silly thought, like a thought in passing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't after everything that happened that I realised that it's a good thing to dream. It's a really good thing.
It's something that I touch on within my book, where I felt where growing up I was in an environment where you weren't allowed to be ambitious. I even gave the example of speaking to a careers advisor and saying that one day I would love to become an author. And she said to me, Jeremiah, don't be too overambitious. So that was the sort of environment that I was in. And I guess earlier when we were speaking, we didn't go into detail, but I obviously named the title of the book and this podcast, Dreaming in a Nightmare. Whenever I mention the title, many people have different interpretations. But going off of what you just mentioned, when you heard the phrase dreaming in a nightmare, what exactly comes to mind?
So I'm a big lover of music. I think everything I do stems from music and belief. And there's this rapper called J Electronica. And I think a lot of artists in hip-hop, like in music, generally they refer to a term, they refer to a flying lotus, like a lotus, lotus flower, lotus leaf. And that rapper always mentions that the beauty in that flower is that that flower can blossom in the worst conditions. It can be in a muddy lake where people throw litter at it every single day, stinks, but the flower will still blossom into this beautiful lotus flower, and those lotus petals would just fly everywhere, and you can find it anywhere. And these rappers that I listen to, they always refer to themselves as flying lotuses because they managed to blossom growing up in nightmares and in the worst conditions. So when I think of dreaming in a nightmare, I think of how my mission statement as an individual is to be a flying lotus.
Incredible, beautiful. Going back to Rocks, it was your debut. Were all of the actors within the film actually first-time actors? And what was the whole process in terms of actually participating and acting within the film?
Yeah, about like 95% of us were first-time actors. And I think the women who drove these workshops and did the whole process, they were smart, because while we were workshopping, they were training us. They recorded every workshop and said, don't look at the lens. So when it came to actually acting, things that people went to drama school for 3 years to unlearn, they were doing that with us in the beginning.
Yeah.
We were having... I mean, when I think back at it, and that was practically therapy, like I was telling these women things I had never told my forever friends, and learning to be vulnerable in that space that they had created made it easier to just, because that's what acting is, it's vulnerability. And like, we were learning to be open and vulnerable. It didn't feel intimidating at all.
Yeah.
Even though the director, Sarah Gavron, she was quite established, but I think the ignorance of everyone in that situation is what kind of drove the film. Because everyone was like, Sarah Gavron, Sarah Gavron. But the other actors would easily tell her that something that she's doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Or this is not believable. Or she would make a joke and nobody would laugh. Because we're from such a different place.
Yeah.
But the fact she was open to not receiving laughter, and we were open to just absolutely anything, because people that don't understand, we just take it as it goes. So everyone was just taking everything from each other, and that's how the process just felt really true and freeing and organic.
Going back to what you said earlier about, you know, being part of this Rotz film, being able to dream, how did you sort of feel afterwards, sort of like post-production, the whole film is done, what was like the next step for you?
I think I remember going back to school, so after filming I was going straight back to school to finish exams.
How old were you at this point?
I think 15 or 16. I was doing GCSEs, which I thought was like the craziest thing, but it's nothing. it's literally nothing. I remember feeling really bad for everyone else who was around me, because I felt like I had experienced something that the vast majority never would. And it wasn't being an actor, it was being inspired to that degree. Like, I was looking at women who were in the same position. Some of them had masters, some of them didn't. The books that they introduced me to, the conversations I was having, the experience as a whole was something so alien to my secondary school experience. And both experiences were beautiful in its own ways, but one was slightly more freeing. And because of that, I was able to like blossom into something else. But I see that in my peers, how much of a straitjacket they're in because of the situation that they're in.
Yeah.
And all it takes is that one person to free that. When everybody comes across that one person. So I couldn't help but feel like I was in a place of privilege. Even though my house situation, my circumstance didn't change. I mean, guys, you guys know the pay when it comes to independent film. After a couple clothes you order, family, it's finished. So it's not like my circumstance changed from lifestyle. It was really mentality.
And the mindset,
like a visionary mindset. Afterwards, I felt like I wanted to do so many things. I was making plans, like career plans. Like me and my friends always laugh about how we sit down and we talk about council tax, whereas some of our friends they never talk about that at all. We talk about mortgages, And sometimes we have to check ourselves and let's talk about something that's a bit more ignorant. But it's just how freeing our minds became.
Again, reminded me about myself growing up, a very similar situation. And what I touch on within the book is the fact that so many people are sort of fixed to one particular view on life and one particular mindset. And that could be down to socioeconomic background, it could be down to environment. And when you actually compare it to other young people that would have other experiences, you know, I talk on my experiences in sort of like a state school compared to the experiences of some of my friends who attended Eton as an example. You know, from the moment they went to school, they were told, you're going to be a CEO of a company, you're going to be a future prime minister. And then going back to myself, the example I gave earlier, where if you're dreaming, you're too overambitious. I can totally relate to what you just mentioned. I have to say you've come a very long way in a short space of time, which is incredible. And from being cast in Rotz, following that, you actually had your director's debut. Tell us a bit more about that and working with such a massive global brand like Gucci.
It was a lovely experience. But it was difficult because the branding protection that they had and how that collided with everyone's creative. And I understand it more now looking back on it. But I just didn't realise all those different entities and all those different voices colliding.
Yeah.
And at the forefront is still the brand. But besides from all of that, champagne problem. It was an amazing experience. Because I studied art, I've always loved looking at stuff with a bigger picture. I love painting, particularly like creating a piece, like starting out from a canvas, and then making that protagonist. But with acting, it's like you are the protagonist, and I've never really wanted to be the center of attention. But then directing, I was able to look at things with a bigger picture and have that control over the whole painting, well, the whole film as a painting.
Yeah, and how does that feel now? You know, not many actors actually cross over to becoming directors or producers, or within any other sort of space. So having the experience of both being on screen and behind the camera, how has that sort of impacted your work now?
It's made me respect the director role a lot more and the producer role, the caterer's role. It made me respect every other role, and with that respect that I have in my subconscious, it makes me want to just approach things a little differently. Because on Rocks, like Ask Anyone, we were very, not lazy actors, but we thought like we had the time of the world. Whereas there's like so many people trying to figure out how to do this at that particular time. So instead of like walking really slowly to the next scene, I would be a bit more prompt.
Yeah.
My friend knows, like, I used to walk really slowly. Like, in there's some scenes in Rocks where Rocks was meant to be running, but I just refused to run. So it just made me respect all the entities.
Different perspectives.
Exactly.
I read in an interview that you said, quote, "I want to see people like me on screen." How do you want to change the film and TV industry? And what would you say are some of the barriers to entry?
The barriers are fear. It's fear. I know everyone hears it from the corporate world, but the reason why they have the term an angel investor is because it's a rarity for someone to believe in something that much. And I think that's what we're missing in the film and TV world. We're missing angel investors. And I think it's an arrow towards the creative industry, because people are supposed to be, that's what we're supposed to be, angel investors. We're meant to be people who don't care if that doesn't do the numbers. But we want to make this thing because it's interested us in the moment. But I understand it's a numbers game, and they don't want to take those risks because they want to do what they've always known to do, because that's what gets the numbers, that's what gets the views, that's what gets the plays. And I think people can limit it down to like an unconscious bias and discrimination. But I think the fundamental for me is fear, because everybody wants to hear a story. Everybody loves gossip. Everyone loves hearing what happened in the neighbor's house, and they don't care what the neighbor looks like, but they want to hear it. But the reason why that's not translating on screen, because street gossip is easy, but to make a whole production on street gossip, it takes more effort. But they're not sure that everyone's gonna feel rewarded of that effort. Yeah. I think I don't know if I understand the fear. I understand fear, but I don't understand fear in this instance, in the creative sphere, because I think the fear is a detriment, and I think it's against the whole ethos of what art is. I think art is a risk. The people making these decisions, people could say, you don't owe anybody representation. Like I've always said, I know Teresa's been on the cast before, and Teresa articulated it so gracefully. She said, "I don't need representation. I want it. I don't need to see myself on people's screens. That's my preferred choice. That's what I want." And I think, and me personally, I don't understand why that's not something everybody else would want. Because I think the same people complaining about the 9-to-5 just to stay alive, 9-to-5 just to stay alive, seeing the same thing every day, doing the same thing every day. If you're consuming the same thing every day, how would your situation change? I can't remember who said it, sorry. Someone said people who do the same thing every day and expect change, that's insanity. I think if you're consuming the same types of stories every day, how are you meant to move beyond your situation and be inspired and see the world for what it is, and how the discovery, how endless the storytelling is? I don't know if I'm making sense, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Before you came earlier, there was actually a discussion around diversity. And I think you've spoken true words in the way of that example of an angel investor. You know, sometimes it's about taking a bet on someone. And there was great examples earlier of even Steve McQueen, who was someone who, quote unquote, may have been someone who would, by someone else, someone had taken a bet on him, if that makes sense. And he's an Oscar-winning director. So yeah, I'd totally agree with the angel investor thing. I think rather than only feeling it is something within the creative world, I think it's across so many different industries. So yeah, it's really, really important. And thank you for that insight. Going back to the directing, is there anything you're currently working on, or anything coming quite soon?
Stuff I'm working on, but I've had to really try and exercise patience. And when I think about some of my favorite musicians, like D'Angelo, it took him 7 years to make the album of a century. I think it's one of the best albums to ever come out. But, so I just need to, I'm working, I'm writing, I've got stuff in the works with amazing people, but it's annoying me how long it's going to take, but the time, it makes sense. Because every week I work on it, there's something new, something changes, like changes forever. And yeah. I'm just excited when I think that it's ready. And I think, I don't know if it will be next year or the year after that, but this is the sad reality of developing, because I know they started working on Rocks from 2014.
Oh, wow. And shot in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all about timing and getting the right timing. For anyone who's listening, who wants you to answer the question why, again, before Rocks, you had never acted before. I'm guessing you didn't have like a crazy wealth of experience. Why is it something you wanted to pursue? And why did you want to sort of in the future pursue a role within the creative industry, either as an actor or a director? Like, what exactly is your why?
I also want to ask you this as well.
That's fine.
But I think it's the only thing that felt that really made sense, and one of the only things that I never doubted, because I'm a big doubter with everything, very indecisive. I don't even know what I want to eat most of the time, very indecisive. But when this was the one thing that I'd never doubted, I never doubted loving art, never doubted painting, never doubted my interest in film. I mean, sometimes when you're, this industry is just annoying, so sometimes you're like, oh, I want to quit, but never really. I always knew that was a passing thought. And my why is that I think this is what we came here to do. And I think even though the creative industry has been segregated into one thing, I think you mentioning the things that we were talking about before and how it's like inextricably linked into every industry, that just makes me think how everything we do as human beings is interconnected anyway. So we're all creatives. I think this is just a strand that feels stronger and more visible. And this is what I've chosen, and this is what makes me feel free. This is what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's what I think about the first thing in the morning. It's how I can create. And the why is, like, I think it keeps me and the vast majority of people alive.
So looking back to when you were...
You didn't answer the question.
You caught me. My why, I believe everyone has a purpose. I think for me, the purpose that I felt I had was to inspire others around me. So even when you gave the experience of going back to do your GCSEs, and you had just experienced this crazy sort of wealth of experience with the acting, and it sort of blew your mind, I found myself in a similar place. From young age, I was involved in youth politics. I had founded my own consultancy agency that had advised some of the biggest companies in the world. But my nightmare was that even though I was surrounded by dreams and meeting some of the biggest entrepreneurs in the world and having all of these opportunities, I would go back to my reality in Brixton, which was the complete opposite of all of those worlds. And I would come across my friends and family, and a lot of them would have never experienced anything that I had experienced. So for me, it was, how can I continue to grow in life and try and open up as many doors as possible so that everyone within that environment, like me, can have similar experiences? Because again, all it takes is one lived experience to completely change, I would say, the trajectory of one's life within certain environments. So I would say that was definitely my why. The question that I wanted to go into was, looking back to when you were very little again, what advice would you give to a five-year-old bookie?
I would tell myself to not be too concerned with how people treat you, because it has nothing to do with you, it's to do with them. And I think a lot of us, me particularly, even when I was young, I based my existence off of how people treated me. And from those treatments, I thought, that's what I needed to work on. But everything people do stems from themselves. And I think that me being so obsessed with how other people viewed me, it brewed up a people pleaser, someone that was so obsessed with everyone else but themselves. And I think there needs to be a balance.
And I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to think about yourself in the future. So this is called future self visualization. And I want you to imagine walking down a path, knocking on a door, and the person at the other side of the door who answers is yourself 30 years into the future. What is one question that you would like to ask your older self?
I thought you were going to say D'Angelo was going to be at the door. I don't know.
So one question to ask your older self.
Who are you doing this for now? Because I had a big group. I had a discussion with these older people. They were all 30s, not old, but they were all 30 plus. And they, sorry, 30s, not old, but they were all 30 plus.
Don't get us
older
in trouble
than me, sorry,
now.
Sorry, older than me. They were just talking about who do they do this for. And they all said, I'm doing it for my younger self. And I thought that narrative was selfish. Because I thought we did this for each other. And I didn't understand, how can you do this for your younger self? Who you must be, are you not doing it for your peers, your parents, your siblings? But I wanna love myself, and I wanna owe everything to myself that much, to that point where my older self says, I did it for the younger you. And the fact that I don't understand it right now, I wanna, that older bookie, I want, if she understands it, and she truly understands it, I think, to hear that answer would be there in the movie.
What is one thing you're grateful for?
The people that have ended up in my life. From the type of all relationships, whether they've been good or bad, with my parents, my brothers, my friends, my work friends, I know everyone's mind is the same, but the stuff that I've been drawn towards, like my taste in music, I don't think it's incredible, but the way it really makes me feel. And I've met people who have said that they can go a year without listening to music. And the fact that that feels like insanity to me. And the fact that I love this thing so much. And I know I couldn't do it without this thing. And I'm so happy that my body took to it. So I guess I'm happy for my mechanism. Even though, as a young person, like, we tear down our bodies, our appearance a lot. And never ever take the time to be grateful for the way I've been built, and what surrounded that machine. So in short, the people specifically, I owe it all to the people around me. I'm very, very grateful for friendship in every way, whether that's like romantically in friendship, with my brothers, with my parents, with my friends. Because I see that as romance, because it feels very true. And I don't see the need to differentiate when it comes to love.
Yeah. Amazing. Bookie, I want to say thank you for dreaming in a nightmare with me today. Thank you, everyone else, for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast episode.
Dreaming in a Nightmare is a Bookomi production. This episode was produced with support from our friends at Snapchat. Thank you, Bookie Bakre, for being an excellent guest. Thanks to Jeremiah Emmanuel for being himself and for inspiring the podcast with his book. And thank you out there for listening. I'm Richard Kilgariff. Bye for now.